Hey folks, if you haven't tried Audible yet, what are you waiting on? You've heard me talk about it for a while now. Audible offers an incredible selection of audiobooks across every genre, from bestsellers to mysteries and thrillers, true crime and more. Audible is the home of storytelling. You'll discover thousands of podcasts from popular favorites to exclusive new series. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. But members also get full access to a growing selection of included audiobooks, Audible originals, and podcasts, and you can download or stream those included titles all you want. And the Audible app is great. Makes it very easy to listen anytime, anywhere, whether you're traveling, working out, walking the dog, or just doing your chores. Right now, I'm listening to a thriller titled Then She Was Gone by Lisa Jewell. It's absolutely amazing. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/TCAT or text TCAT to 500-500. That's audible.com/TCATT or text TCAT to 500-500. Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 145 of the True Crime All the Time podcast. I'm Mike Ferguson, and with me, as always, is my partner in true crime, Mike Gibson. Gibby, how are you?
I'm doing good, man. How about you?
I'm doing pretty good, Broseph.
Broseph?
Broseph.
Broseph.
It's good to see you.
Well, thanks, Maneth.
We just had a little spaghetti.
Spaghetti.
So we did some carb loading, and now we're ready to pump out some recordings.
Too much carb loading.
Yeah, a little bit too much carbs for sure.
But I wanted to try it. You know, I wanted to see how your spaghetti was.
You wanted to try spaghetti? Like you've never had it? Or
I never had it. It's a spaghetti out of a box, you know?
Spaghetti out of a box.
It was interesting.
All right, man. We got some new Patreon supporters, so let's give those shout outs.
All right,
we had Joanna Richards.
Hey, Joanna.
Angela Feudo.
Hey, Feudo.
Christian Young jumped out at our highest level.
What's up? You're really young.
Jess Clark jumped out at our highest level.
Hey, Jess.
Pamela Berger.
Hey, Pamela.
Haley Espinoza jumped out at our highest level.
Espinoza.
Stephanie Gulick.
Hey, Stephanie.
Nancy Vella.
Oh, Nancy.
Lisa Nutt.
She is Lisa.
Derek Calzada.
Calzada.
Cindy Ortiz.
Hey, Cindy.
Jennifer Ratcliffe.
Thank you, Jennifer.
Stephanie Burroughs.
What's up, Stephanie?
Ashley Gold.
Hey, thanks, Ashley.
Marianne Christofferson jumped out at our highest level.
Christofferson. Like it.
Sherry, not Sherry.
Okay, Sherry, Sherry.
Denise McCartney.
What's going on, Denise?
Ariana loves TCAT the most.
Ariana. That's
what
true?
That's what she put in for her Patreon name.
Okay.
Don Black.
Hey, Don.
And Ricky Duvall jumped out at our highest level.
Ricky.
Great new Patreon support. And then if we go back into the vault, Gibbs, this week we selected Paige Summerfield.
Hey, Paige.
Been with us a long time, and we appreciate all that long-term support that we get.
Longevity. I like it.
There is something to be said for longevity.
That's what I say every day I wake up.
What's the saying? Longevity is the key to life. Is that a saying or
did you just make that up?
I don't know. It is seems very obvious, so I don't know if that's a saying or not.
Is that a Fergie quote?
Fergieism.
Fergieism.
We had some PayPal support as well. Teresa Regensburg.
Hey, Teresa.
Christine Samuelson.
Thanks, Christine.
Stephen Wills.
What's up, Stephen?
Shyla Green.
Hey, Shyla.
And Jake Arlo.
Arlo.
Arlo. So amazing. We love it. We appreciate it. Gibbs.
Yes.
Episode number 2 of the Reviews Are In podcast is out right now.
Awesome.
And the feedback we're getting is really good. Very happy that people are enjoying it.
Good.
We had a snafu where it wasn't making it onto all of the platforms. I think that's corrected itself.
That's a review right there.
And then episode 3 will be out in what? 2 days. So every Tuesday.
Yeah.
But you don't have to worry because if you subscribe,
it's right there.
It's right there.
Go listen about gummy bears on one, Shake Wake on the other, and
all kinds of good stuff. We have an episode out right now on Unsolved. It's about the Fager family murders.
Yeah, late 80s, terrible crime. Kind of mix in a little BTK.
Because we're in the Wichita, Kansas area.
Yeah.
So, you know, anytime you're in the BTK time frame,
his name's going to come up.
And, you know, and that leads me back to Mindhunter. I'm waiting to binge season two.
Yeah.
But from what I hear, they keep showing the BTK little snapshot.
They're doing that again, huh?
Yeah.
Kind of teasing you, getting you like, hey, maybe. Yeah.
I don't want to give anything away, but from what I hear, it's like they keep doing it, but it's like season one. They're building up to something BTK related, no doubt.
Sure.
So next week, Gibbs, we are putting out our very first ever video Patreon only episode.
Yeah.
That's going to test my editing skills for sure. We've never done it.
I'll definitely give you a run for your money.
I'm sure you will.
Yeah.
But, you know, it should be fun. If you're not a current patron, and this is a great time to sign up. There's a lot of good stuff out there.
Yeah, jump on over. You'll be surprised.
All right, you ready, man?
I'm ready.
Let's get into this episode of True Crime All the Time. First, let me give a big shout out to Lana Hyatt.
Lana.
For her help with research and writing on the episode. I actually forgot to give her shout out last week.
Did we?
Yeah, I felt bad.
Well, I'm sorry, Lana. I try to control them.
She's been so helpful. She's giving us so much support lately. It's amazing. So in this episode, we're covering the murder of Colleen Slimmer. We're going to Knoxville, Tennessee.
Yeah.
Place that you and I know very well.
Extremely well.
Have spent a lot of time there.
Yes.
I've had a lot of family in and around that area and a lot of reasons to visit that location.
Yep.
Most people, I don't believe, Gibbs, will be familiar with the name Colleen Slimmer. And not a lot of times, right, with our TCAT episodes, do we give the name of the victim in the title. But we are this time. Most people probably associate this case with a woman named Krista Pike.
Sure.
The problem I have with it is she's just one of the perpetrators. She's the most well-known. She's thought of as the ringleader, but it's hard to put like three names into the title. So that's a little different for us. Also, Krista Pike became the youngest woman to be sentenced to death in recent times in a very, very long time. So, you know, for that reason, she is pretty well known. And we're also going to tell this case a little differently. We're going to start out with the crime, something we very rarely do. We've done it. We just don't do it all that often.
You're right. We don't.
For one reason, there's very little information out there about the victim, Colleen Slimmer. Which I think is very sad.
It is, but you know, with the media and everything, they're going to kind of focus around Krista because of, unfortunately, because how terrible the crime was.
Yeah, and I think that's what they've done. I really searched. I know Lana searched too. We just could not find much information out there about Colleen Slimmer. I mean, she's the victim in this case. But we don't have any background on her. There's just very little out there. Like you said, Gibbs, I think the media latched on to Krista Pike. And maybe people will see why as we get into the episode. But it doesn't make it any less sad that the victim in this case wasn't really represented. Her story wasn't really told. Now, there might be some books out there that I haven't read, but in all of the research, I just really couldn't find much about Colleen. We know that Colleen Slimmer was from Orange Park, Florida. She was in Knoxville, Tennessee, specifically to attend a Job Corps program, which we'll talk about a little bit. But this story really takes place on a winter night. It's about 8 p.m. on Thursday, January 12th, 1995. Four people, 19-year-old Colleen Slimmer, 18-year-old Krista Pike, 17-year-old Tadarrell Shipp, and 17-year-old Shadala Peterson. They're headed to Blockbuster. And for all you youngins out there, just so you know, Blockbuster is where you used to go rent movies before you could literally, Gibbs, watch anything your heart desired at the touch of a button.
Yeah. Before Redbox. Before...
Not even Redbox. I mean, I'm talking literally on demand, pressing a button on my remote control. There's hardly anything I can't watch in a split second.
On Netflix, I know.
Netflix, Hulu, Amazon, there's about ready to be Disney, NBC Universal. There's a whole bunch of new ones coming out.
So many.
Apple TV.
Pluto.
Pluto, yeah. Pluto. I know you like Pluto because it's free.
I do like Pluto.
But Blockbuster back in the day was kind of like a destination.
It was.
You know, Friday, Saturday night, we got to get to Blockbuster. Yeah.
Date night. Let's go pick a movie out.
Yeah. In the old days, it was VHS tapes, right? Then we morph into DVDs.
It was Blockbuster and chill.
That's what it was.
Yeah. That's what we did. Blockbuster and chill.
So these four individuals, they all knew each other through this Job Corps program. And what this is a government-funded residential program. So they lived there.
Okay.
That assisted disadvantaged kids. A lot of them were high school dropouts from the age of, 15, 16 to the early 20s.
So like life skills.
Life skills, career skills. Yeah, things like that. But the important thing is that they lived there. They were teaching them skills. Krista Pike and Tadaryl Shipp were in a relationship. They were friends with Shadala Peterson. And Colleen knew all three of these individuals. But I don't believe she was friends with them. In fact, she and Krista had some fights, some squabbles on pretty regular basis. They were minor incidents, but they were getting into it. But for whatever reason, and I couldn't find the reason, she trusted them enough to go to Blockbuster that night with those people.
Well, when someone says, hey, let's go to Blockbuster, anybody else want to go? You say, yeah. Because I'm going to rent me something, and I'm going to go to the candy, little candy zone they had.
They did have a candy zone.
They did.
They also had a popcorn zone.
I always went to the Twizzler section.
I know you like Twizzlers. The problem is, Gibbs, what Colleen didn't know was that Krista had it out for her. And, I mentioned these squabbles, these little minor altercations that they had had. Krista believed that Colleen was trying to steal her boyfriend to Daryl. And she wasn't happy about it. Most women aren't. When they think that another woman is trying to steal their boyfriend, Colleen also doesn't know that the group she is with has brought some weapons, including a cleaver and a box knife. So obviously, if she had known any of this, she's not going to Blockbuster with these people. So as they're walking to Blockbuster, Krista mentioned that she had a bag of wheat hidden in this park called Tyson Park. It was actually a part of the University of Tennessee's College of Agriculture.
Well, I guess if you're going to grow weed or have weed, that's the place to stash it, right?
I don't think she was growing it, but I get what you're saying, right? If you need a place to hide your weed, hide it near the Department of Agriculture.
Yeah, kind of blend in.
So the main thing here is Colleen is lured, right, into this park by Krista. And when they get there, Krista confronted her and an argument broke out. But it progressed to so much more than that. It became physical. Krista at one point began banging Colleen's head off her knee. I mean, this is something like what you would see in a UFC fight.
Yeah, skullbreaker, man.
And it's actually legal.
Yeah.
In a UFC fight. But both people sign up for that. They know what they're getting into.
Sure.
Colleen didn't sign up for this. Krista threw her to the ground. She was kicked repeatedly. This got very vicious. Punching, kicking, stabbing. To the point where Colleen was begging for her life and asked Krista, why are you doing this to me? And obviously, this all comes out later from Krista. She tells people, she looked up at me and asked this question. But what Krista said was that it made her angry. It angered her that Colleen had to ask, why are you doing this to me?
Like, you should know, is what she's trying to say. You should know why I'm doing this.
I guess. I don't know that she ever really said that. Now, what she did say, and maybe this goes more to the point, I don't know. She said it's harder to hurt someone when they're talking to you. So I don't know if she was more upset about the fact that she thought Colleen should know why they were having this, you know, vicious fight, or be quiet because you're making it harder for me to hurt you.
Because you're making it more personal.
Maybe.
Yeah.
But whatever the case, the more Colleen talked, the more she got kicked in the face and all over, right? I mean, they beat her. Gibbs, this went on for somewhere between 30 minutes to an hour.
So that's a long time to be beaten.
It is a very long time.
You can see a lot of damage done just in under a minute. At a good fight, somebody can do massive damage in a minute. So to keep doing it on and on.
Well, and I said up front, this is a particularly brutal crime. There is no doubt about it. But you're right. The duration of, you know, the brutalization is a long time. At a certain point, again, Colleen is begging for her life, and she starts to try to bargain with this group. She's telling them that, you know what? I'll just leave. I won't even go back to the Job Corps place. I'll walk straight to Florida if you just leave me alone. But they don't. They keep beating her multiple times. She tries to run away. They catch her. At one point, Tadaryl tripped her, knocked her to the ground, and he held her down so that she would stop struggling. Colleen was then dragged to another area. And this is when they broke out the box cutter and started using it on her stomach, different areas of her body. Unimaginable.
Yeah, it's really brutal, man.
And it gets worse. And we know Krista dies. So I'm not giving anything away by saying that, but you know, the autopsy later would say they believe she felt everything. Everything that's going to happen to her this night up until literally her time of death. And there's more to come. That's a scary thought.
It is scary, man. She had to suffer that way.
And she did. She really suffered. At one point, Colleen apparently said something to Krista that she was going to tell on her. You know, she was going to tell everybody at the Job Corps what she had done. Krista later said, the voices went off in her head that this can't happen. You know, I can't be put up for attempted murder. I can't get kicked out. I can't go to jail. All of these things running through her head led to her making the decision that she had to stop Colleen from being able to do this. Right? Telling other people. She just can't have that happen. She could have walked away. And it would have been, up to that point, a pretty brutal assault.
Sure.
But she could have left it at that, dealt with the consequences, and went on with her life. But I think, Gibbs, she's standing over Colleen. Colleen's bleeding. There's a point that she made a decision, right? Mm-hmm. We always have that point where you make a decision to go left or go right.
And I think she's got voices in her head that says, go this direction.
Yeah. And she must have listened to them, because when Colleen tried to roll over, tried to get up and run away, Krista took the meat cleaver and put it right in her back, causing, you know, a huge cut in Colleen's back. But this doesn't kill her. She's wounded, but she's not dead. At a certain point, Tadaryl finds a rag, and he wraps the rag around Colleen's mouth so she can't scream, so no one else will hear them. And Krista takes the box cutter, and she cuts Colleen's throat several times. The autopsy listed a 6-inch gaping wound across the middle of her neck. And it detailed out the fact that, you know, went through the fat. It went through the muscle of the neck. This was deep.
It was extremely deep.
It also listed out, you know, 10 other slash wounds.
Yeah, some in her arms, some in her across her neck. I mean, the arms were the defensive wounds, sure. For sure.
But it was basically every time Colleen tried to get up, she was pushed down, and more damage was inflicted upon her. Now, at some point in the attack, they took off Colleen's shirt and her bra. So she's naked from the waist up.
Okay.
And some in the group would later say that was to keep her from running away.
Because she wouldn't want to run away because she's topless?
That doesn't seem to make any sense.
Not at all.
But I think this is an episode, this is a story where a lot of things are not going to make sense, right? A lot of things that these 18, 17-year-old people did.
Right.
And a lot of things that they said and then still today say.
Well, I was going to say, you got to think of the source it's coming from.
No, you're exactly right. The story can only come from one place. There were four people that were there that night. One of the individuals we know dies. That's Colleen Slemmer. So this whole story can only come from three different people. No one else. So they are brutalizing this young woman. And Tadaryl makes the decision that he's going to carve a pentagram into her chest with one of the weapons that they had with them. We'll talk about Tadaryl a little bit later, but he dabbled in a little bit of Satanism. He would admit that. But again, Colleen is drawing on something. I don't know where it's coming from. Some type of willpower, Gibbs, to try to stay alive. She's trying to get up and run away after everything she's been through.
Especially to her throat, man. She's still hanging in there.
And that survival instinct kicks in. But she's not going to get away. Krista takes a big chunk of asphalt and she heaves it at Colleen, hits her in the back of the head, knocking her down. And Tadaryl and Krista take pieces of this asphalt and begin beating her with it. In Krista's own words, later to police, she would describe Colleen breathing blood in and out. She said that Colleen was jerking, but she didn't stop. She just kept hitting her. Now, this is when Tadaryl claims that he got uncomfortable with what was going on, which seems a little late in the situation.
Now I'm getting uncomfortable. Really? After he just carved a pentagram into her chest?
And he joined in beating her with a chunk of asphalt. But now all of a sudden he's starting to think, you know what? Maybe I'm not doing the right thing here.
Yeah. Maybe it's time for me to stop.
So he says that he walked away, walked down the hill. And this is when Krista Pike beat Colleen to death. She would later tell people, Gibbs, that she wanted to hit her head until she could see her brain.
And she does that.
She does it. But it just tells you what kind of person we're dealing with here in the form of Krista Pike. And back to the very beginning, I think it's why the press focused so much attention on her because of the things that she said, the acts that she committed. Not that the other people weren't bad, because they were. But she was by far the most brutal. She was the ringleader.
It was so bad when the coroner did his autopsy. So they typically put a letter or a number by a cut, a wound, anything that they need to take a picture of for future evidence. They decided to use letters. He actually went through the whole alphabet because there were so many that he had to back off and just concentrate on the major, the bigger wounds, the bigger stabs, slashes, and not concentrate on the smaller issues.
It's really telling.
Yeah. I mean, that's how brutal, extremely brutal this was.
So Tadaryl comes back from his little walkabout. During the time that he was gone, however far he went, Krista killed Colleen. He said that when he got back, Colleen's head was, quote, all busted open on the side. His words. So they drag Colleen's body to a wooded area, and they left it on a pile of dirt. There was some debris. They threw her clothing in some nearby bushes. So Krista has killed Colleen, and this was, like we said, a very brutal murder. But before she left, she cut off a piece of Colleen's skull and took it with her.
As a memento?
As something.
Wow.
Again, for me, it just goes further into, you know, really telling you how depraved this person was. All right, Gibbs, let's take a quick break. Hey, what are the important dates that we all remember? Birthdays, anniversaries, holidays, right? These are the important dates that most people tend to remember. The Parcast Network remembers important dates in true crime history. Today in True Crime is the new daily podcast that takes you back to the biggest events in true crime that happened each day in history. And they cover all types of crimes, the infamous, and some that are just plain interesting. There's no doubt there's a crime story for every day of the year. August 31st, 1888, Jack the Ripper commits his first murder. November 19th, 2017, cult leader Charles Manson dies. Today in True Crime is Parcast's first daily true crime podcast, so you can get your true crime fix every day of the week. With new episodes each day, you'll never run out of true crime content again. Crime never takes a day off, and now neither does Parcast. Follow Today in True Crime for free on Spotify and anywhere you listen to podcasts. And next up is ZipRecruiter. Gibbs, you and I both know how hard it is to find qualified candidates. Takes a long time. You have to weed through a lot of applicants. ZipRecruiter makes it easy. All you have to do is go to ZipRecruiter.com/TCAT. ZipRecruiter sends your job to over 100 of the web's leading job boards, but they don't stop there. They have powerful matching technology that scans thousands of resumes to find people with the right experience, and they invite them to apply to your job. They analyze each application, and they highlight the top candidates. ZipRecruiter is so effective that 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site within the first day. And right now, our listeners can try ZipRecruiter for free at this exclusive web address, ZipRecruiter.com/TCAT. That's ZipRecruiter.com/TCATT, ZipRecruiter.com/TCAT. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. So the three of them made their way to a gas station. They washed their hands. They got rid of some of Colleen's personal effects. They threw away her identification. They got rid of the box cutter at some point along the route on the way back to the Job Corps dorms. They also returned the meat cleaver to its owner. This is something I haven't talked about. They borrowed this meat cleaver from someone. Now, I'm sure they washed it off, but they gave it back to whoever they got it from.
Imagine reading the newspaper eventually about that as you're dicing up something
and at home. Finding out that you've been using something that was used to help kill a woman.
Nauseated.
Well, and let's look at it from a different angle. If you're going out to hurt someone, to kill someone, do you take along something that you've borrowed from a neighbor? That doesn't make a lot of sense.
I don't know why they just didn't throw it away and tell whoever they borrowed it from. They lost it. We'll buy you another one.
But that person knows they borrowed it. So if it comes out later that a woman's found in the woods and has a meat cleaver-like
wound,
gaping wound in her back, you as the owner of that meat cleaver might be thinking, this is the person that borrowed it from me. None of that just makes any sense to me. But again, we are talking about very young people making horrible decisions, not thinking things through, not thinking about anything but, you know, their raw emotions. They obviously don't have, you know, any thought for the sanctity of human life at all.
Right.
They were able to take this girl's life, Krista Pike in particular.
Sure.
In what seems to be a very easy manner for them, for her.
I mean, really, from the time they left to go to Blockbuster and circle back, it's only 2 hours and 15 minutes.
Yeah, they're back to the dorm by about 10:15.
Yeah.
And like we mentioned, This attack was 30, 45 minutes. Some people estimate it could have been as long as an hour. You know, there was time to walk to the park. There was time to get to the gas station, dispose of things. There wasn't a lot of dilly-dallying. Let's put it that way. And I think to even go further into the mindset or the lack of thinking on the part of Krista Pike. So she gets back to the Job Corps place. She's euphoric. It's almost Gibbs as though she is super high on the fact that she has committed murder. She goes and talks to her friend, Kim, and literally just tells her what she's done.
Boasting about it.
Yeah, I just killed Colleen. But that's not the most bizarre part. Kim would later say that Krista, as she's describing the murder, is dancing around in a circle. She's laughing, she's giggling, and she's singing la, la, la.
La.
La. However many laws.
Yeah.
As though she's starring in a Broadway musical.
Yeah.
Describing the fact that she just murdered a woman.
And then she reaches in her pocket and she pulls out the piece of skull that she brought with her and shows her that.
She's happy about it.
Look at my souvenir.
So imagine your college days, right? You've got a roommate, a friend, not lifelong friends, let's say, right? But you know each other. You've become friends. Your roommate comes home and says, oh my gosh, man, I'm so happy. I just killed our mutual acquaintance. Yeah. That goes to school here, Joe. Oh, and by the way, here's a piece of Joe's skull.
Yeah. What do you think about that? Pretty cool, huh?
It's absurd, right? When you think about it, when I say the words out loud, Gibbs, it's like I don't believe them. But it happened. This is all backed up by Krista's friend, Kim.
I know I wouldn't be sleeping in that same room as that person ever again.
No, not if she is capable of that. Now, the thing about it is Kim doesn't go to the authorities right away. You would think somebody would, but she makes a decision not to. Now, somebody comes in, tells you a story, and you think they're pulling your leg. That's one thing.
So, I mean, when someone tells you the story, you're probably like, yeah, whatever. You never do that. But then she pulls out a piece of the skull. That's when you know stuff's real, man.
So the next morning, it happens to be Friday the 13th. Krista is with Kim again. And it's documented in the court records, Gibbs, that during this conversation the next day, Kim asked Krista about the skull. What'd you do with the piece of the skull? She says, I'm going to eat breakfast with it. You're getting into some, not that we're not already into the macabre, but it's getting even stranger.
Definitely in the world of bizarre.
Krista told another classmate the same thing, right? I killed Colleen. She's even apparently wearing the same shoes that she wore when the murder happened and tells this classmate, that's not mud. That's Colleen's blood on my shoes. Again, this classmate doesn't go and tell anybody, doesn't go to the authorities.
So she's trying to come off as a badass. Look at me. This is what I'm going to do to people. If you cross me, if you try to take my man from me.
I don't know. I don't know what was going on in her head because she has said, right, that she killed Colleen because she didn't want her to go back and tell people what she'd done. But yes, she just goes back and starts telling all kinds of people.
Everybody.
That same day, Friday the 13th, Colleen's body was discovered. This is pretty early, about 8 a.m., by an employee of the University of Tennessee grounds department. And I guess, Gibbs, when this guy first saw the body, he thought it was the corpse of an animal.
Because it had been beaten so badly?
Colleen's body was in such bad shape. This has nothing to do with decomposition, right? This is the very next day. This has everything to do with the extreme physical damage that these individuals inflicted on her. But eventually he figured out it was a woman. So he notified the police. Investigators come, they rope off the crime scene. They're looking at the semi-nude body of Colleen Slimmer. One of the officers on the scene later said he wasn't sure where her face was. He didn't know what body part exactly he was looking at. He didn't know where her face, like he knew where it should have been probably.
Right.
Based on the rest of the body, but it didn't look like a face. That's how disfigured she was.
From the blows of the asphalt and the cuttings and
all of it. But this is when Krista did something that, again, not very bright, but it is something that a lot of killers do. It's also something that I can never wrap my head around. Right, around 4 or 5 p.m. that day, Krista shows up at the crime scene. She has some of her girlfriends with her. She starts talking to the police officers, asking them, what's going on? You know, why are you marking this area off? She asked them who the victim was. I guess they were there for about 15 minutes. Krista was the only one that spoke. None of the other girls said a word. But she did enough talking with this officer that he took note of a few things. First off, he saw that she was wearing a pentagram necklace, which obviously Gibbs is going to stand out later as soon as they figure out that a pentagram was carved into the chest of Colleen Slimmer.
Sure. I mean, it's going to be hard to, I mean, you could say, well, is that a coincidence? Doubtful.
Well, on top of that, this cop said this girl was acting giddy. It was almost as if she couldn't contain her excitement.
She was exhibiting all the wrong kind of emotions.
Sure.
For that scene of events.
You know, you're at this park. There's a huge crime scene. Police say, somebody died. Your first reaction is not to go, ha, ha, ha. That's not it.
No.
Like, oh my gosh, that's terrible. She didn't do any of that. So she inserted herself into the case. And basically what she did is provide herself up to police as a suspect.
Sure.
Not that she probably wouldn't have become one anyway. She had done so many strange things, talked to so many people. It was going to come out. But to go to the crime scene and be very suspicious right away.
Yeah. And thinking that the police wouldn't catch that on their radar.
You might as well be wearing a sign around your neck that says, I'm the one you're looking for.
Yeah. Should just hand it out. Put your hand out with a piece of skull in your hand and said, here's the rest. So they can go ahead and, you know, arrest you.
It's about 36 hours after the crime, right? January 14th, Tadarryl, Shadala, and Krista were interviewed by police. Krista and Tadarryl show up at the police station right off the bat. Officers notice that they're both wearing pentagram necklaces.
Let's go to the police station. Let's not try to hide anything. Let's just put this on the outside of our shirt so they can see it.
Let's wear a necklace with an emblem on it that matches the wounds found on the victim. This is not a long, drawn-out thing. Basically, the minute they start talking to Krista, she admits everything.
Cat's out of the bag.
Oh, my God. I think I read somewhere, Gibbs, it was 46 pages of interview notes. But this is not them grilling her. This is them just taking notes on, you know, everything she's spilling.
She's just happy to give it all up.
Tadarryl admitted what happened. Much less on Shadala, right? We don't talk much about Shadala. We don't know as much about, you know, what her role was. It definitely wasn't anywhere near the level of Krista. I don't even think it was close to the level of Tadarryl.
But she was at the crime scene.
She was.
And she didn't do anything to stop it.
She was involved.
Yeah.
She might have, even in the beginning, you know, participated in the punching, the kicking. You know, I don't know. Just because, again, not much focus was ever placed on her. Most of it went on Krista, a little bit on Tadarryl, not much on her. So let's talk about the three of them a little bit. Tadarryl Shipp, he was from Memphis, Tennessee. Met Krista Pike through this Job Corps program. He was only 17 years old at the time, a year younger than Krista. He admitted to authorities that he had been into Satanism since around the age of 10.
It's really early.
It seems very early. He also said that he got Krista into it as well as they, you know, were having this relationship. So I mentioned the pentagram necklace. Apparently, he was also wearing a hexagram earring. Now, I'm not as familiar with the hexagram. Apparently, it is a symbol for conjuring or controlling demons.
Now we know.
Now we know. Gibbs, I still maintain my argument that it's not the right accoutrement to wear to the police station when you know you're about ready to be interrogated about a murder.
Yeah, I would have stayed clear of those.
You know, whatever, we say this all the time, whatever you're into on the side, behind closed doors or whatever.
Right.
Let your flag fly.
Yeah. Leave it there.
But if I get called down to the police station regarding a furry murder, I'm not going to wear the furry suit. That would make no sense.
In fact, you're going to remove the furry suit from your residence.
Exactly. And I'm going to plant it under your bed.
Yeah. Okay. Now I know. Just be careful what you find underneath my bed.
The scary thing about that is just getting my fingerprints inside your bedroom probably would put me away for much worse things.
Most likely.
Than the planting of the furry suit.
Absolutely.
So I got to think this whole thing through.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, back to the court documents. 6 days before the murder, Tadaryl told someone that he needed to make a human sacrifice. You know, don't tell people this. I'm not telling anyone how to get away with something. You shouldn't be doing any of this in the first place.
Yeah.
I'm just talking about, you know, how, I don't know if dumb is the right word, but it just doesn't make any sense.
No, I think they were dumb.
Now we're going to find out that Krista's not. She's actually very intelligent. I think the things that they did were not smart. They were dumb.
Yeah.
The things. Now, later on, Tadaryl is going to tell authorities that, you know, the killing of Colleen had nothing to do with human sacrifice. It didn't have anything to do with Satanism at all to start out with.
His Ouija board, the little Ouija board didn't tell him do this, do that.
He did have a Ouija board at one point.
Oh, yeah.
That was in the court document.
Okay.
So he said not at first, right? Didn't set out for this to be a human sacrifice. But once it got to a certain point, and then once he carved the pentagram, it kind of was. And he even thought of it that way, I think. In his mind, he's like, I didn't set out to do this.
But opportunity presented itself.
But now that it's gotten to this point, here's my human sacrifice.
Yeah.
That's kind of the way I viewed it.
But it's going to get too serious. I'm going to walk away for a little bit.
Oh, yeah. I don't buy that at all. I buy the fact that maybe he walked away, but not out of, oh, I can't believe where we're at now. Now, the one thing about Tadaryl, he didn't have any history with the law.
But that doesn't really mean anything, does it?
No, I mean, he's only 17 years old. I think, if anything, it just means, you know, we talk about a lot of killers, and they have a lot of things in their background, sometimes crimes at a very early age. He didn't have anything like that. We also just talked about a guy that, if you believe his record, didn't do anything really, really bad until he was 50 some years old, right? In the last episode.
That's true.
I think if anything, it comes into play maybe at sentencing, right? They always talk about that. You have no priors. Does that make a difference? Because he was ultimately found guilty of first degree murder and conspiracy to commit first degree murder, but he was a minor. If he was an adult, he would have been eligible for the death penalty, but he wasn't. So he got a life sentence plus 25 years, but Tadaryl's ship will be eligible for parole in 2035. That's only 15 years.
Yeah.
I say only 15 years, a long time from now, but 16 years.
Good.
My math's a little off there.
I think how old he would be.
But it goes quick. So my math is correct, which it wasn't just now, but I'm thinking he was born in 78, which would make him today 41-ish.
So you're saying 56, he'd be eligible for parole?
Probably denied. And even if he gets out, it will mean that He spent 40 years of his life. If by chance he got out on the very first time, which like you said, probably will not.
Right.
40 years of your life. Think back.
Yeah.
And imagine giving up the last 40 years.
You're looking at me because you know I can do that. I know I can go back.
I know you
40.
Can subtract that. And, yeah. And so can I, but I would be six years old.
Hey, there's a few years in there I would give back, you know? So
there's a couple you don't remember. There's a couple you would give back. A
couple I repeat.
A couple you were forced to repeat by the educational system.
Yeah. Why'd you bring that up? That hurts.
You know, springtime is all about fresh air, fresh starts, and freshly cleaned homes. And it's the perfect time to give a fresh look at SimpliSafe Home Security, the only home security system I use and recommend. Springtime also means more time outside and away from home. And I trust SimpliSafe. I love the myriad of features that they offer. And I love the price. SimpliSafe was named Best Home Security Systems for 2024 by U.S. News & World Report. The system blankets your whole home in protection. There are so many sensors, from detecting break-ins, fires, floods, and more. Plus, they have a variety of indoor and outdoor cameras to keep watch over your property day and night. It's backed by 24/7 professional monitoring for less than $1 a day, so you get fast emergency response and dispatch when you need it most. There's no contract, and they have a 60-day money-back guarantee, so you can try SimpliSafe risk-free. Don't absolutely love it? Send the system back for a full refund. SimpliSafe has given Gibby and I and many of our listeners real peace of mind. We want you to have it too. Get 20% off any new SimpliSafe system when you sign up for Fast Protect Monitoring. Just visit simplisafe.com/TCAT. That's simplisafe.com/TCATT. There's no safe like SimpliSafe. True Crime All the Time is sponsored by BetterHelp. I want to ask everybody one question. How is your social battery right now? Does it have a ton of energy or are you drained? And why is it at that level? You know, it can be easy to ignore our social battery and spread ourselves thin. What's the right amount of socializing for you and how do you recharge? You know, maybe you're the type of person who thrives around people or maybe you need some more alone time. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. I think therapy is a very powerful tool for learning positive coping skills and helping to empower you to be the best version of yourself. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. No more hopping in the car, driving, and sitting in a waiting room. You can do your entire session from the comfort of your own home. All you have to do is fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and you can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/TCAT today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/TCATT. So then we get to Shadala Peterson. Again, we said not a lot known about her, much less than the other two. Nothing that we could find as far as background, record, brushes with the law, anything like that. But it has been reported by some that she's the one that brought the box cutter. Now, there's also people that are saying, no, she's not. So really conflicting reports about who brought the box cutter that night. But we really didn't talk about Shadala. We don't know how much involvement she had. I'm thinking it was not that much. They weren't able to find physical evidence to really tie her. They didn't find clothing with her blood on it like they would with Krista and Tadaryl because they did a large part of the beating.
I think
Krista especially.
I think just the fact that she was there.
Yeah.
And didn't do anything to stop it or go find help. Probably, you know, just the association to the crime.
Yeah, she was definitely there. That part is known. I think prosecutors had a hard time really tying her to specific acts. So in the end, she walked out of this whole thing with a plea deal, 6 years probation for accessory after the fact. That threw me a little bit.
Yeah.
And I guess they're saying, okay, she helped dispose of her effects. She helped dispose of her IDs. Helped clean the knife, maybe. That's how you get to be an accessory after the fact. She definitely did not kill Colleen Slummer, right? That, from all indications, that much is known. So she never really did any time.
No.
Few months, probably, while they were putting the plea deal together.
And you can imagine how Colleen's mom had to feel.
Yeah. I don't believe she was happy with this part. Shadala essentially walking away from her daughter's murder. Now we get to Krista Pike. And I said it, right? The ringleader. She was born March 10th, 1976 in West Virginia. She was born prematurely. And we've talked a little bit, Gibbs, I think, in other cases about, you know, preemies, people being born prematurely. It can cause some issues. Now, it's not going to cause everyone to be a killer. It can, in some instances, I think, cause behavioral issues.
Well, I think premature anything can cause some issues.
Yeah, all kinds of different issues. It can.
Yeah.
She did not have a good childhood. Was raised by her grandmother until Krista was about 12 years old. It might have been a big moment for her. You know, losing this, really the only person in her life that was kind of on her side, supported her, especially at the age of 12, right? The age of 12 for a girl, and you and I both have girls, that can be a rough age, 12, 13 years old. I'm living through it right now.
You are living through it right now, and I've been there, and you've been there already with another one. So.
Yeah, but both of them are different. You know, I was lucky enough to have two girls. You were lucky enough to have a boy and a girl. You can say it either way you want, but
right.
So I went through it twice. I don't think they're ever the same, right? No two people are the same. By the age of 13, Krista's father, who was then taking care of her, kicked her out of the house. But it's the reason why he kicked her out. And from what he said, it's that his two-year-old daughter that he had with his second wife said that Krista sexually abused her. It's not something you hear a lot.
No.
A 13-year-old girl molesting another girl, a young girl.
And her sister, on top of that.
So she had to go live with her mom. The problem was she never had bonded with her mom. Remember, she lived with her grandmother. For whatever reason, her mom couldn't take care of her. I didn't see all that, but now she's back. She's living with her mom. And from the research, you get the sense that this was an environment for Krista where there were no rules. And Gibbs, you know what happens when kids don't have rules.
Yeah, it's never good, man. If you don't set rules, you're going to have a bunch of issues.
Well, if you don't set rules for a child, where's the boundary, right? How does a child know, I can go right up to this, but I can't go past it, right? Because that's the rule.
Yeah.
That sets the boundary of what I can and cannot do. If you're in a free-for-all, well, then do whatever the hell you want.
Yeah, you're looking at chaos, people out of control.
And you're looking at no consequences for your actions. That's what I always think, right? My kids, they always get mad at me for the discipline. I'm sure your kids did too when they were younger. And in your head, you're thinking, yeah, I know. I was a kid too. I didn't like it. But I also know why my parents did it. There's a reason for setting boundaries.
Well, sure. And we know that she didn't have any boundaries. Clearly that night, she didn't have boundaries because she just kept on going and going and doing what she thought she could do.
And look at it. It's almost as if she acted like there would be no consequences. Well, right? Sure.
The way she boasted that night, the morning, she just kept on going.
I can tell anybody I want about it. I'll go back to the crime scene and talk to the cops because you know what? Nobody's going to do anything.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not putting this all on her mother. Don't get me wrong. But that's not a good environment for a child. I think most parents listening would agree with that. Krista was described as very unruly during this period of time. She was also described as a pathological liar by members of her family.
Well, you know, if you're not going to give them boundaries, if you're not going to have some type of rules, they're going to break them, and then they're going to cover up that with a bunch of lies, right?
That's true. If and when you do try to call somebody out on something.
And they're going to be manipulative. towards any and everybody.
Yeah, and I think she was.
And you know, and I know, that's a nightmare. That's a kid you do not want around your kids at all.
And I think that is borne out in the research. Members of Krista's family said that, you know, they wouldn't let her around their kids back in the day. She was a bad influence. That's pretty bad when your own family, your aunts and uncles and people like that are saying, you know what? You're a bad seed. I don't even want you hanging out with your cousins. Krista dropped out of high school in the ninth grade, which is barely high school, right? You just got there.
Yeah, I mean, you're just getting warmed up.
So she ends up at the Job Corps in Knoxville, right? To learn some life skills like we talked about. That's where she met to Daryl. It's where she got into Satanism. We talked about some of the fighting between Colleen and Krista. Krista thinking that Colleen had designs on taking to Daryl away from her. Krista would later make some claims. One, that she woke up one time to Colleen standing over her with a box cutter.
So now she's making claims about somebody that can't defend themselves.
Sure.
Okay.
Because she can. Or you can say whatever you want.
Yeah, but...
Now, there's nobody to corroborate. There's nobody that's going to come forward and say, oh, yeah, I saw that too.
Yeah. But she's like, she was standing over me with a box cutter. I had to do what I had to do to protect myself.
But Krista has said a lot of things. She has said that she killed Colleen because, you know what? She just felt like it that day. She felt mean, I think she said. She's also claimed the exact opposite. That when they went out that night, there was no plan to kill Colleen Slimmer. There was a plan for the two to fight, right? Krista said she was sick of Colleen. She wanted her to leave to Daryl and herself alone, but it got out of hand, right? Once it got to a certain point, and we talked about it, she felt like she had to kill Colleen or else she was just going to go back and tell on her.
Right. But she's also not going to come out and say it was premeditated.
Well, no.
You know, that's not good.
She's not that dumb.
Right. But she did leave with a box cutter. She did leave with a meat cleaver, you know? So... some pre-planning there.
Yeah, you don't need those two things to beat someone up.
No, especially when you have two other people on your side.
And one of them is a 17-year-old guy.
Yeah.
Now, we keep using the word dumb. I said it there on purpose because her defense had a clinical psychologist evaluate her. This person pegged her IQ at 111, not Mensa level. To me, Gibbs, that's pretty smart for someone that dropped out of the ninth grade.
Yeah.
She was by no means dumb.
No.
Or not smart. She did a lot of things that weren't smart.
She just didn't think that any rules ever applied to her.
I truly believe that. I truly believe it. And I think it goes back to, you know, parts of her childhood. Now, the other thing that the psychologist said was that Krista suffered from a very severe borderline personality disorder. Obviously, the defense wants to make this a big deal, right, at trial. They're hoping to use this in her favor. The evidence against her is overwhelming. What they're trying to do is get her out of the death penalty.
Well, sure. Yeah.
But it doesn't work. Krista Pike was sentenced to death on the charges of second-degree murder and conspiracy to commit first-degree murder. 12th day of January, 1997. So I know it's really hard to hear. It wasn't so much the wording, right? Basically, the judge says, you know, you're sentenced to die by electricity.
Yeah.
She can get the electric chair.
Right.
It's her crying out that I really wanted everyone to hear, because you think back to Colleen.
Yeah.
And what she went through. You know she was crying out. You know she was begging for her life.
You don't hear those cries.
No. And you can't.
Nope.
Because she didn't live.
No.
So to hear Krista Pike cry like that, you think, at least I do. I don't care. I don't want to hear it.
No, I think you're right. And I think there's somebody out there that might listen and go, that's really sad. I hate to hear her cry like that. I would just challenge you to think about what you didn't hear. Colleen at the park that night, being beaten to death, being cut, being slashed, being pounded with a piece of asphalt.
Essentially by herself.
Yeah.
She's on her own. These other three people are in some form or fashion against her. She's on her right. own.
Hear those cries. Put those cries in your ear.
So you contrast the crying from Krista with a letter that she later wrote to Daryl. And it says, you see what I get for trying to be nice to the hoe. She's calling Colleen a hoe.
Wow.
I went ahead and bashed her brains out so she died quickly instead of letting her bleed to death and suffer more, and they effing fry me. Ain't that some shit? Gibbs, this girl in a letter is trying to say that she did the humane thing.
After I tortured her for 30 minutes, 45 minutes, I try to put her out of her misery fast.
She is casting herself in the light of, as you would think of, like a rancher who comes up on like an animal that is dying and has to put it out of its misery.
Yeah, she's the do-gooder. I put her out of her suffering.
While at the same time calling her a derogatory name like a hoe.
Oh, and by the way, I'm the one that caused the suffering.
Yeah, that's
that
true.
I put her out of.
So now we have to talk about Krista in prison. In 2001, Gibbs, she sent some letters to a convicted murderer named John Lee Fryman. This is a guy I'm not familiar with. We need to make sure we have this guy on the list. Apparently, he was just down the road from us in Warren County.
Oh, that little nice little prison out there?
Yeah. I'm assuming Lebanon Correctional Facility.
That would be correct.
But these were some disturbing letters. The contents were disturbing. The words were disturbing. But even more so was the fact that she sprinkled the letters with her own blood.
Okay. Like a little love letter? Her style?
Yeah, I think her style. It was more of like, I enjoy this. It was all kind of death and it was disturbing stuff.
She was trying to connect with somebody that she thought might have been on that same...
That probably was on that same level.
Yeah.
That same year, she tried to choke another prisoner with a shoelace. I almost did.
This is why you no longer get shoelaces in prison.
She was convicted of attempted first-degree murder. That's how bad it was. In prison, she got convicted of attempted first-degree murder. Then in 2012, Krista hatched an escape plan. So I guess over the years, Gibbs, she was writing to multitudes of men. Anybody that she could find or anybody that wrote her. But at some point, she always turned the letters to, I love you, come see me, I can't live without you.
Well, sure, she's mind games, sure. Manipulating them into doing whatever she wants.
Like you said, she was manipulative. But I think she was angling, right? I think she was trying to get someone to help her with her grand plan. And finally she did. But the plan didn't work. She never got out. The Tennessee Bureau of Investigation, they found out about it. But arrests were made.
Yeah, two individuals.
Yeah, New Jersey officials arrested a 34-year-old New Jersey man. This is a guy that she had been writing to for some time. They also arrested a 22-year-old prison guard.
That ends his career in the prison...
Correctional field?
Correctional field, yeah.
It was reported that some money had already changed hands. So my thought is, I didn't see all the details, but my thought is she was able to manipulate this man in New Jersey who had been to visit her a number of times.
Sure.
To pay off this prison guard. To help her escape. But luckily they found out about it. They foiled the plan. I don't get this whole falling in love with a murderer thing. You know, Netflix has The Making a Murderer.
Right.
I'm going to start my own called Falling in Love with a Murderer. And just do the whole thing exploring why these people are so drawn to these murderers in prison who they know have done such horrific things.
But they do. They like it. They want to hear the story. They want to... I mean, sometimes I think there's some level of attraction that they have, which is messed up. I mean, you shouldn't even be looking at them that way. If you knew what they did, why are you even looking at them that way?
I don't know. That will all be part of the documentary. You and I will have to fly out and talk to these people, yeah. Both the prisoners and these people that they've catfished. Or it's not technically catfishing. I think they are who they say they are. They're just who they are is really bad people.
Yeah. No, I agree.
So go find somebody that's not in prison. There's plenty of people out there.
Yeah, I don't know if that's a self-esteem issue. I don't know.
Obviously, it happens more with women falling for guys in prison because there's more guys in prison.
Sure.
Just naturally, it happens that way. What we've heard or what we've seen in the research is that some women like the fact that they know where their man is.
Yeah.
He's not going to be running out around on them with another woman, that's for sure.
And he's going to write you some good letters or emails because guess what? He's got all the time in the world to do it.
He's going to be very attentive. I haven't seen as much research on the guys that fall in love with women because it just doesn't happen as much. Over the years, Krista and her attorneys, they fought her death sentence, right? They've tried to get it overturned, but they've had no luck.
Well, let's think about that for a minute. How easy is it going to be to get your sentence overturned if you're strangling somebody with a shoestring and you almost kill them? It doesn't sound like you are headed in the right direction as far as rehabilitation.
Well, and you tried to mastermind an escape plan.
Yeah, exactly.
So your prison record is not helping you out in any way. I think what is helping, it hasn't helped, but what you would think would help is the fact that they just don't execute that many women. Right? Krista Pike is the only woman on death row in Tennessee. She's currently 43 years old. And is housed at the Tennessee Prison for Women in Nashville.
Now think about this. When do you think the last time they executed somebody in Tennessee was? A woman in Tennessee.
I'm assuming it was a long time ago. But you obviously know the answer and you're going to tell me.
I am going to tell you. 1837.
Man, you were just a toddler.
I was just
when they executed the last woman.
I was something, all right.
I will say this. In the 1800s, they executed a lot more women than they do today. We did the one down in Texas, I think it was. And it was the same way. I don't think a woman had been executed since like 1800 and something. It was a Carla Faye Tucker, maybe.
Maybe, yeah.
I think the last execution of a woman before her was maybe 1800s, too. But, you know, Tennessee doesn't execute that many people anyway. I think I read somewhere since like 76, they've only executed like 11 people. When I say only, a lot of people would say, well, you shouldn't execute anybody. But you know what I'm saying?
Well,
compared to like Texas,
yeah,
they might have executed 11 people yesterday for all I know.
I think they might have. I don't know.
They're not that prolific, but Texas is also a lot bigger than Tennessee.
Sure.
But Texas, all joking aside, people make jokes about it, but they do execute a lot of people. A lot of people get the death sentence in Texas, and it gets carried out. There is, I think, about 60 people on death row right now in Tennessee. One of them is a woman named Krista Pike. But that's it for the murder of Colleen Slimmer.
Tragic.
Very tragic.
And unneeded.
Yeah, unnecessary for sure. I still feel bad that we don't know more about Colleen. That keeps going through my head. And not that we don't know, that the press didn't really report on it, that nobody really outside of maybe some authors, and if they did, I haven't read the books, didn't really put out more about the victim. Because there is plenty on Krista Pike.
Yeah. It's unfortunate that we don't have a little bit more background, but...
Yeah, I hated that. I hated that part. We got some voicemails. You want to check those out?
Oh, of course.
Hey, Mike and Gibby, Team Gibby over here. Jess calling from New Orleans. I'm calling because I heard the episode you guys referred to, Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? And you talk about the one line, stay out of the Woolworth. That was actually a line spoken by one of my coworkers, who's a local celebrity in New Orleans named Spud McConnell. And we frequently reference that line all the time whenever I'm trying to make sales. I'm a radio sales rep in New Orleans. But anyway, you guys do a great job, and I love y'all. Keep your own time ticking. Bye.
No, that was interesting.
Yeah, a little factoid.
She should get him to call in and say the line.
So we can play it. How great would that be?
That would be awesome.
And then also say Team Gibby.
That he's Team Gibby too?
Yeah.
Hey, Mike. Hey, Gibby. This is Jake Fowler. I'm presently in Columbia, South Carolina, but I live in Winter Springs, Florida. New listener. Been listening a couple of months now. I'm up to episode 79. Back on episode 76, you mentioned the Taco Bell murders. I was hoping you were talking about the Taco Bell murders in South Daytona, Florida. It was real close to home for me. My stepdaughter is actually dating the son of the only survivor of that tragic attack. Also, I wanted to give another case called the Xbox murders. You know, this day and age and technology, people are going crazy over this stuff. And, you know, that's a real fascinating case where six people were murdered. So first time caller, just wanted to say I love the podcast. I really appreciate what you guys do. I make a 6-hour drive every weekend from Florida to South Carolina and back. So, yep, keep doing what you're doing and keep your own time ticking.
All right. Love it. Yeah. And I don't remember which one we were talking about, but if it's the, I think it is the one in Florida, the Taco Bell murders.
I think so.
You and I were going to do it. We were also going to do the Xbox. So both of those are on the list for sure.
Yeah, we got them.
For
we
some just... reason, did the, I think the Xbox murder happened around Christmas. I could be wrong about this. For some reason, I thought we were going to include it in one of the Christmas episodes we did.
Try to park it near that time frame.
But I can't remember. It's been a while since I looked into it.
Hey guys, my name is Kaylee Harris. I'm living in Oramucto, New Brunswick, Canada. I love your show. I love it so much. I can't stop. I listen to it at work, on my way, on my drives, all that kind of stuff. I had a case suggestion. I'm originally from Miramichi, New Brunswick, and we're known for, actually the only thing we are known for, is the monster of Miramichi, Alan Joseph Legere. He killed 5 people, and one of them actually being my grandfather's first cousin. Halloween was canceled that year, all that kind of stuff. It was kind of cool, if you want to take a look at it. Anyway, be safe and keep your own time ticking, guys. Bye-bye.
Right, we will definitely take a look. I don't know if we have that one on the list.
I don't think we do.
I will say this. I think you're also known for having some very hard-to-pronounce city names.
I think I'm almost a little French.
I'll throw that out there.
Seem a little French.
You seem a little French.
Don't be making me go Italian.
I thought you were going to say oui, oui.
Oh, yeah, oui, oui, yes.
Hi, this message is for Mike and Gibby. My name's Adele. I'm calling from Toronto, Canada. And I just wanted to give you guys a serious shout out for helping me get through some long hours. I've been listening to your podcast for, I think, over a year now. And I knit scarves and listen to my True Crime All the Time podcast. It's one of my favorite things to do. I just finished the Russell Williams episode, which really hit home for us here in Canada. So thank you for doing some Canadian coverage. And in the future, I think if you check out the killing of Tim McLean that happened several years ago here in Canada as well, that would be a great story to cover. Pretty gruesome, but I think it would be a pretty interesting episode. Thanks for all that you guys do, and keep your own time ticking.
Ooh, that was a good keep your own time ticking.
It was, and she does scarves, and you know how much you love a good scarf.
I was getting ready to say, you both have a lot in common because you like to knit scarves and listen to True Crime All the Time as well.
I know, and you like to wear scarves. You wear them.
You keep bringing them, man. You knit them, you bring them over. I feel bad not wearing them.
Yeah, well, you know, the fact that you don't have much on, I got to give you something to cover that stuff up with.
She did. What I really loved about her voicemail and her voice in particular was the word shout out.
Yeah.
I don't know if you heard it. You can really hear the oot.
De Oot?
The Canadian kind of shout out. I'm not doing it right,
like,
but like boot almost.
Shout out.
Shout out.
Shout out.
Shout out.
It's a good shout out.
I'm not doing it, but
it's a good shout out.
I liked hers the way she did it. All right, we had mailbag too. We actually had a lot of mailbag. Carl Geckler, and I talked about Carl last episode.
Yeah.
He was our Patreon merch winner for July. Well, Carl is like this architect sculpture guy. And so he said, you know what? I'm going to send you some of my 3D sculptures that he does on his 3D printer. Thought he was going to send one. He sent a boatload.
Oh, man.
They're awesome.
He got feeling good with this printer.
Yeah. So we got some really great stuff from Carl. I'm going to pick one probably and put it on the desk right where you usually put your cup. So you're going to have to move that cup. But
Okay.
But Carl does have a website. He wasn't trying to promote it, but it's carlgeckler.com. You should check it out. It's very cool stuff.
The Geckler.
Ari Ansbro apparently has been traveling around the world, sent Harley chips literally from all kinds of places, Australia, Hawaii, you name it. Also sent some exotic jerky.
Really?
From Australia.
When you say exotic.
Like exotic animals.
Okay.
Made into jerky.
Everyone's sure. Yeah.
Chocolates, a magnet. And you know, Gibbs, I'm loving these magnets. I'm putting all these magnets on the fridge here in the studio.
You do. You got them up there looking good.
I'm liking those. Jill Gabriels sent in some Harley chips from North Georgia. Larry Jones sent in a Harley chip from Riverside, California. He sent us some local chapstick. Nobody's ever sent chapstick.
Local? Is it used?
No. Local does not mean used. It means it's made there in the area where he comes from. He also sent some jerky. What a thoughtful gift, chapstick, right? You never think about chapstick until you need chapstick. I'm not saying everybody send in chapstick. I'm just saying it's one of those things where you're out and you're like,
but you go through a lot of chapstick.
I do.
Yeah.
Well, because I talk a lot. I'm really trying to carry you through this show. My lips get chapped. Yeah. I get parched. It's tough, man. Yeah,
that's okay.
All right, everyone. That is it for another episode of True Crime All the Time. So for Mike
and Gibby,
stay safe and keep your own time ticking. I want to tell everybody about a game that I've been playing recently called Two Dots. You know, primarily Two Dots is a puzzle-based game. You have to connect at least two dots of the same color to make a move. And then those connected dots are removed from the game area, and the dots above them drop down until they hit other dots or the floor beneath. But there's a variety of game modes. There's this really cool one called Scavenger Hunt, which is a really relaxing hidden object game. There's different levels to the game that are grouped into worlds, and it's very satisfying to move up. There's over 5,000 unique puzzles and fun levels, and with all the different gameplay modes, it really makes the gaming experience unique and exciting with every single puzzle. The visuals are amazing, and the in-game music I found to be very soothing. You can even challenge your friends on Facebook to make it competitive, link up, and see how your dot skills match up. And best of all, it's free to download, and you don't need Wi-Fi to play it. You can play it offline as well. Think you have what it takes to solve some fun puzzles? Download Two Dots now for free on Android or iOS.